Hi, I'm Dave Schwartz. Welcome to my Pace Makes the Race podcast. Today's guest is Mark David. We had him on a few weeks ago, and it was just a fantastic show. And so we're going to get started with Mark momentarily, and he's got a topic for us. But before we get started, the boss here is a real slave driver, and she makes me remind you that we are pacemakestherace.com. Spell that out, pacemakestherace.com. We used to be the Horse Handicapping Authority, and we have been a subsidiary of Horse Street Publications for, gosh, decades. Anyway, all right, so don't forget, get on our email list, and remember that the best stuff always goes to our email list first. Mark, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Dave. I can't complain. And I'm a complainer, so I could complain if I was.
Okay, so tell me, Mark, the last time you were on, you just did so great, and I enjoyed having you on so much that this time I just simply said, okay, pick a topic, let's decide what we're talking about. So that way, you know, if this is really bad, we can just blame him. What's the topic for today, Mark?
So you're my pseudo-wife now, Dave?
Yes. Yes. So what's our topic for today?
Sorry?
What's our topic?
Well, my topic is basically transitioning into a new way of playing. And the basis of that is that, you know, I can pick losers, but so what? Now what do I do about that? Basically. Okay. I mean, I'm really good at picking horses that everyone else thinks will win and they're going to lose. My percentage of doing that is much higher than anyone else, but that doesn't really get me anywhere. So I'm having to, over the last week or so, or 2 weeks, or, you know, it's been on my mind for a while, but I have to transition into another way of playing the races that benefits me by using that skill that I have that, you know, is as good as most and maybe even better, but just, you know, picking winners or playing show bets, it, for whatever reason, it's not going to get me a result relative to the amount of work I already do. So I have to find a new way to play.
Well, let me ask you this. When you talk about you can pick losers, are you saying, like everybody else, we pick horses and our horses lose? Or are you saying you're going after races where you can find a horse that's very likely to lose and make the race a good investment?
Yes, I can do that, but I haven't been making it a good investment, not a good enough investment, the amount of time I put in there. So I'll give you a good example. Everyone's on the 1-9 shot, right? The guy at Pompano says he never met a 1-9 shot he didn't like. And I would say I've never met a 1-9 shot I did like, ever. Because I know I don't like them because I know I'm going to lose money if I keep playing them. That's the way I look at it.
Okay.
And
So you have found that historically, effectively what I'm hearing you say is that your handicapping of extreme odds horses, like 1-9, 1-5, whatever, are simply, they don't come out profitable. I mean, obviously, if you take them all as a group, they used to almost break even. In fact, going back about 15 years, they did break even. They actually made a small profit. But that has changed with the era of the whales that we're in now.
Yes. And I would argue that it's a really tough way to make, even if you can do it or could do it before. It's just the margin of error is you lose one and you negate the 10 you bought. So, I mean, you know, that's a lot of pressure and a lot of work to avoid the loser one, right? That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to avoid the one that's going to lose. And sure, wipe out the profit. So that's a lot of pressure, a lot of work. So many variables go into what could happen to make that one lose. I think it's the wrong side. That's the way I approach it. That doesn't mean that I'm going to say, okay, everyone do 9-shot. I want to find what's wrong with him. But what I'm saying is that I will see the holes that other people won't see. For instance, I'll read, this horse can't lose. Or I don't see any way this horse could lose. Or he's really sharp. He's going in the right direction. And most of the time, all of that is true. Of course it is, because 1-9, a lot of them should win. I'm not even trying to go against many of them. But I know that there's 2 of those 9, at least, that are gonna fail. That's just the odds of if you did the numbers, that's how it would come out. 2 of the 9 are going to fail. And I can almost always pick from those 2 and get one of them. So I want to focus on the 2 that are going to fail and pick the one I think is going to fail for sure. Or, you know, it doesn't have to be 1-9. It can be 4-5. It can be 2 6-5 shots or a 6-5 and an 8-5. And I want to beat both of them with something else. And I got to find a way on the other side. Because like I said, so what? I can pick losers. That doesn't mean I cash. I have to still pick some kind of winning formula to benefit off of that. So I've been working on that the last couple of weeks, let's say.
Now, I know I've watched some of your posts. I read between the lines when you say something like that, and I know you've written to me privately. So your methodology, tell me a little about your methodology for doing this research. How'd you go about it?
How did I go about exactly what? I'm not sure you're asking.
Well, you said you've been working on this for the last couple of weeks. How did you work on it?
Okay, well, I'll go back and I'll tell you a story. A couple of stories which were in my mind of how I got to be playing the way I always do and how I probably should have been playing all along. So, you know, all of us are lifers, like Ernie Munich and John Burrell, or even Derek's been in it a long time. He's not as old as us, but he's been in it a long time. And you and others and Garnet. Most of us have been in it a long time. So I remember when I first went, and obviously I didn't know anything, right? I mean, the first time most of us go, we don't know anything about, you know, their horses. They all look the same, like you and Derek say. They look the same. I don't know what the difference between one or the next, or what a post position means, or, you know, or speed. What does that mean? Does it mean he runs faster? Is he faster for a piece? I don't know what any of that means. It's horses start and they finish, and when they get to the line first, that's the winner. That's all I know, right? I didn't want to give me that out, but other than that. So I remember the first time I went, and I didn't know anything. My friend had to like pull my arm out of my socket to get me to even go, because I didn't want to go. But, you know, I figured out how to pick a few winners, and I did okay the first time. And I only played winners because I didn't know anything about exactors or triactors, any of that. So we went another time. I went with a second friend who knew a lot more than the first friend, as it turns out. Not that he was any better at it, but he knew more. I started to play exactors and triactors because at that time I started to think maybe I did know something. So I was getting too smart for my own good by this point. But anyways, I did think maybe I could do this. And I happened to pick two exactors cold out of maybe three that I played. And I hit the triactor in the last race with a three-horse box, just box three horses. And I hit it for a $2 one for $200, and I think I spent six or 12, something like that. And I got home, and you know what I'm thinking when I get home, right? This what? Is really easy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna quit school, and I'm going to be really good at this.
Quit school? So we're talking a long time ago.
Yeah, this is grade 12, so I'm maybe 18, something like that. You know, just, and I'd never really played horses or even gone. I'd watched the Kentucky Derby on a Saturday afternoon, and I knew the names of Seattle Slough and Affirmed and Alidar, but that was about it. You know, I knew Ruffian Broker Lake because it was on the front page of the newspaper. But other than that, I didn't know anything about horses, nothing. I didn't know anything about anything. So, you know, I'm starting from scratch and I'm doing really well the first time. And, you know, but for whatever reason, I stopped playing exotics completely after that and just tried to pick winners. Why I did that, I don't know. But I've never been an exotics player at all. I certainly never played the multi-race plays. I might have played some exactors, some tries, but I wasn't good at it. But I never played a pick four, a pick three. I played the odd double, but they weren't really, you know, it was a favorite onto two other favorites, that sort of thing. And so I was thinking, you know, why don't I play exotics? That seems to me, if I'm going to leverage off a bad favorite and I can't pick the winner, well, just leveraging off the bad favorite, if I'm right enough, is enough to do well. So I've been working on that.
Are you saying in all these years, you've just always concentrated on win, place, or show?
Almost exclusively, yeah.
Okay. Well, and I can identify with that in the sense that I'm primarily a win and exacta player. And to me, everything hinges off of the win bet. Because I figured if I can't get the winner, it's pretty unlikely that I'm going to wind up with the exacta.
Right, but I would say that everything hinges on getting the winner and picking the loser, not the win bet. The win, figuring out who the winner is or isn't. Not that you have to play it as a win, but you still have to, at the end of the day, even if you play pick threes, you still have to know who the winners and losers are. You don't have to bet them that way, but you have to at least know to a better percentage than the average guy that plays it or plays straight win, who is a bad value favorite and who, out of the six or seven that you might pick, if you only had to pick four or five of them in a leg, could you get it often enough to make it a viable play over time?
So, okay, now, wait a minute. Am I understanding correctly? If I'm hearing you right, I've never thought of it before, but you're actually, you could approach a pick six ticket, or let's keep it simple, a pick three ticket, right, and start with, who are my play againsts?
It's not only could I, that's exactly how I do it. So, okay, for instance, last night, I've been working on it for a few days. I did one Saturday and I did one last night. Just pick threes. I've concluded that I don't really want to play many pick fours or above that, only because if I'm playing against, trying to play against a lot of favorites in a row is a good way to lose, because they're not going to lose. Someone's going to beat you, right? I want to narrow it down to a three-race sequence. And then at least maybe of the three, I'll put in the one favorite that I think could be okay, but it's probably going to go down. So half the time he will, half the time he won't, but I won't get beat by him and get wiped out completely. So the thing about a pick three, which is different, at least from what I can see, than the other plays at most tracks, they give you a rolling one. Do you know what that means?
Of course.
Right. So for the people that listen that might not, that means that on the whole card, you know, they start with race one and it goes to two races before the last race, and you can group any three races together and concentrate on the advantage you have the most on all three races. My advantage is beating the favorite the most. So I try to find three races when I go over the whole card where I think I've got three bad favorites in three races in a row.
Wait a minute. Now, when you say favorites, you don't necessarily mean the favorite. You mean one of the low odds horses, right?
I generally start with who I think is going to be the favorite, and then I work from that. So if I don't think I can beat them, then I don't want to try to beat them. I just exclude that race and move over sideways one way or the other.
Sure.
And so I've been doing that. And last night, I put out a ticket that, you know, on my block, which I've changed a bit because of it has to reflect that I don't want to handicap every race. If I think it's not going to be worth my time to analyze every single horse in that race because the favorite's likely going to get it done anyways, or I don't want to try to beat them, let's say, then I'm just not really going to bother my life with that race. I've determined who the favorite is. If I can't make a good case against him in my own mind, then I just pass that race and I roll into another sequence where I think I've got a legit shot at doing that. And because I did that last night, I had 80 combos in three races together, which is very high for a pick three. 80 combos is not really the way you'd want to play, unless you were certain you were beating two of the favorites and you thought you could beat the third one with a decent price horse, or if you got him, you got two very good priced horses in the other two legs. And I did that. I played it as an 80. I got the first two favorites beat, which I was certain I was going to do. The third one I included, I thought I was on the fence on him. He came through, he won. I had the ones right behind him. It didn't matter if he got it done or not. I mean, it killed my price, but I got it anyways. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and because I did that, all I did was I went over the card when I was done, excluding favorites and picking favorites and going over races. And I just narrowed down the three races where I had the best shot to get a price and beat all the favorites I thought I could beat. And it still hinges on me being right about that. If I'm not, then I'm going to lose. But, you know, I mean, at least I gave myself my best chance to make a profit off my skill set. And that's
what okay, I now how you tell us how you did this. I mean, in other words, it's great that you can do this, and we applaud you. But how do we apply what you're doing? I mean, do you have suggestions?
Apply how? Well, I'm not
well you said you're finding favorites that you could bet against. Well, how does somebody in the audience, in our listening audience, do that? What do you suggest?
Well, I mean, there's lots of ways to do it. I mean, everyone has a different way of doing that. How do I do it? What I do is I start analyzing the horse. You know, Ernie Minnick talked about, you know, he watches replays and he doesn't feel comfortable if he's not watching the actual replays. He doesn't feel like he's done his job as a handicapper, right? Those are almost exact words. I would say the same thing. I mean, that might not be, you don't do that. You don't even watch replays, so you don't have to do that. But whatever you know you have to do to achieve that level, that's what you have to do. So for me, I watch the replays. I have data. I have ideas of which types of classes of horses routinely fail as the favorite. I have...
Wait a minute. I can't let you go quite that easy. When you say I have data... Where did you get the data? Did you collect it manually by hand, put it in a spreadsheet, write it down, or do you get a download? How do you get your data?
I collect it manually and I type it in myself. Okay. And then I have a system that, you know, I set up the spreadsheet to do some of the work for me. I have my eyes to look at it and see patterns that certain types of classes and horses and trainers and favorites are always failing to a much higher percentage than the public realizes. And I work from that. I know at the track I play, Woodbine Harness or Mohawk, when they go to Mohawk, certain race numbers will give you a longer shot every time. And within that, you know, I'm a bit
like... Do you mean program numbers?
No. Like race 5 every night will give you...
Okay.
Or race 7. So last night I played 5, 6, and 7. Races 5, 6, and 7. I know that 5 and 7 give you the longest shot every on average. If you took the seasonal average of the whole year, race 5 and 7 will give you the longest shots the most times.
Is that because of the conditions of the race, the usual 5 and 7 race conditions, or is it simply because of the public's reaction?
No, it's the first thing, but not the second thing. It is because of the race conditions, but right. It's also because the structure, the people that are putting the program together want it to be that way.
Yes.
So they're putting those races, whatever conditions they are, they can see that they're going to be confusion or chaos races. So they're putting them there for you to, daring you to try to put a favorite there and beat them with it.
Sure. And they're right in the middle of all the pick threes.
Pick 4 in this case.
Pick 4. Same difference there. There, you know, we had, I told this story a few weeks back on a podcast, but we had a husband and wife team that the husband basically designed the handicapping system and the wife did the daily playing. Mm-hmm. And they were winning players. And this was back in the days when California was first going to the rolling pick three. Mm-hmm. And what they would play, what I recall, was they would play one by one by one, and they were profitable. And their hit rate was very solid, both on an individual race basis and their pick three hit rate. And all of a sudden, they literally started with $1,000 and had doubled it and doubled it and doubled it and doubled it. And I believe they leveled back a little bit, but they had doubled it like 4 times over a period of months. And suddenly it got to be, I want to say it was July, and their hit rate on individual races hardly changed. But their pick three hit rate went, and I'm making this number up, but what comes to mind is it was around 14.5% or 15%. And I believe their race hit rate was about 52 or 53. And overnight, they saw their pick three hit rate go from like 15 to like 11. And all of a sudden, they weren't profitable. So we got together and analyzed their data, and it was quite simple. Really, the 6th race of the day was typically a maiden race with first-time starters, and they just weren't very good at first-time starters. So the 6th race took them out of 4-5, the pick 6 that starts in the 4th, the 5th, the 6th. It took them out of so many of the pick 3s that they were done.
Right. You know what's funny about that, Dave? Last night, race six, which was the middle of my pick three, was a cheap claimer, which I am not good at. That's not my skill. I'm not good at those cheap claimers because there's so many variables that nobody knows what goes on with those horses, right?
Well, and that's your point of view. It's like for me, it's like the Kentucky Derby. I can't, you know, it's not my cup of tea.
Well, it's my horseman's point of view because I've been on the inside. I know what goes on with those horses. So I know that you can't really know if they can walk the next day or that you know, there's so much that goes on. It doesn't really matter why that what it is. I know I'm right about it. So I know that I'm not good at it. And I know it's really tough to pick them. And you can see that reflected in the comments when people try to pick them. They're trying to pick them, but they're even saying that they don't know what they're doing because, you know, this one went this week and then he's no good the next week and who knows why and all that sort of thing. So what I did was I eliminated the top three that I could do on a different variable, on a suicide mission by one guy and two other guys that were gonna take him on. And that took out the first three favorites. That's all I had to do. I portrayed it that way in my blog, exactly that way. And I said, you know what? I don't know who any of the rest of them are gonna win. I know the longest shot on the board's not gonna win because I know him. So I don't need him. No, there's no way he wins in any scenario. But say I'll fall down. He's not winning. So what I did was I took all the rest. I eliminated the top three favorites who I didn't like because of the trip that they were gonna get. I took out the bottom one because I knew he couldn't win on any trip. It wasn't going to work out for him. And I took every one of the rest. So I don't care. I'm just using that leg as value. Whatever I get, I get. I'm not wasting my time trying to figure out. Doesn't matter. I had that race. I got the longest shot, except for the longest shot. I got that one. So
well now, what you're describing is a chaos strategy. And the key, of course, is to know that there's a high probability that this race will be a chaos race.
Yes.
Okay.
And
okay.
That's what I did. And, you know, I don't know exactly how you do it, but we arrive at the same conclusion. If it's a chaos race, if you can exclude the favorites, exclude them. Don't, you know, the worst mistake I see when I watch a lot of people play these, while I've been learning myself, is they take all. So in other words, they're wasting spots they can use in other races.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what they did, they would say is, it's a chaos race, so I'm going to take the three logical favorites that look like they're going to kill themselves anyways, and everybody else. No, you can't have it both ways. Either you're going to toss them and take your chances with what you thought's going to happen, or you're not going to toss them. You can't play it both ways because those spots are spots you can use in other races where you need an extra horse.
Of course. Right? Okay, let me ask you this then. If we're talking, really what you're talking about is strong, creative ticket structuring. Now, yes, if we look at a race, let's stick with pick threes for a moment. You know, the expectation, you talk about looking for races where there are, the favorites are just not going to be there. But right. Is your expectation that you can actually consistently catch three in a row?
And there's an F here, which is what I've learned by watching other people play it, which is what I do. When I'm learning it, I want to see how other people that I think are pretty good at it are doing it. Maybe I can see something they're doing wrong. Why shouldn't I learn off their mistakes? Why do I need to learn off mine, right?
I'm all for that.
Right. So what I see is one of the biggest mistakes I've seen when I've watched people play this, they're trying to make their ticket shorter for some reason.
For money reasons.
No, don't play. If you don't think you're going to get a big price, don't play in the first place. And you'll read that. If anyone that's writing about pick threes that seems to know what they're talking about will tell you, don't try to short it back down. If you're playing for a return, then you play for the return. If not, then don't play it. Be a show better. You'll get returned. You know, you'll lose, you'll win, you'll lose, you'll win. But you won't get hit a lot. But if you're going to play, a pick three to get a big return, then you've got to play more combos. Because like you just said, how can you get three raises in a row if you're trying to beat the favorite and you're shorting up the ticket in places where you think you probably need a horse? You can't have it that way.
Don't you find that, okay, let me throw a little monkey wrench here. From my point of view, I'm not saying that you can't hit like 12 to 1, 20 to 1, and 15 to 1 in consecutive races. But if I'm fishing in that very deep water, like you said, I am going to have to go very deep in a ticket. On the other hand, an expectation of only one favorite coming in over the three races, or one low odds horse, in other words, two price horses out of three, that's worth a lot.
Right, but I agree that the pond is very deep. If you think you're going to get three bombs in a row, no, I don't expect that, right? That's going to happen once in a while anyways, and fine, that'll offset all the extra money you've got to put in to get that one. So you could look at it that way. Like, okay, I'm adding extra horses here and there that are going to be dead money for me as I go along, but it's also going to get me that one bomb one when it takes every single player out, and I'm going to have that one. So one negates the other, and in the meantime, I'm adding horses here and there that get me more returns on the average play that I play. So I don't really care about I'm not looking for the bomb play. I don't care that I have to lose a little bit by throwing an extra horse in that I could probably exclude if I want to shave it a little closer. That's okay too. But I don't want to be that player because I think it's a bad money management strategy to play it that way. I have a big bankroll. I don't have to worry about that I'm going to get tapped out. That's just not going to happen to me. So I don't care. maybe that's a factor for
No,
yes.
I think I personally I think it is healthy to treat your bankroll like I better not run out of this. But okay, when I've talked to pick six players, for example, I have heard them say I never structure a ticket where I'm expecting to cash three horses over $50 because I only need two usually to take the pick six. And if I add the third one, it's just a case of overkill. That's like playing to have the pool by yourself. Do you disagree with that?
No, but what I'm saying is that I don't play a pick six. So I need, you know, I'm not taking a player here and a player there and all the different legs that just missed the favorite and the second favorite came in. I don't have that option if I'm playing a pick three. If the first or the second favorite comes in any leg, then so many players do not, you know, we both talk about, you know, taking out pool amounts from the pool, right?
Sure.
That's the, yeah. So I'm not taking enough out if I'm doing it in a pick three. I need to add more options against the favorite if I'm going to play against him, because I need, unless of course I only have three and I'm confident I'll get one of the three. And the other thing you said, which I don't necessarily agree with, is I don't need three bombs in a row. I think two is plenty. And as long as I get something of value the odd time in the third leg, like I did in race seven last night, then it's enough. The odd time I'll get the bomb on the third one, you know, like I said, that will cover all the extra horses I got to toss in every night just to make sure I get cashed. But one will negate the other, I would think, over time, pretty much.
Well, I'm going on the logic that if the professional level players don't want to play three long shots, I mean, in other words, they're not concentrating on three long shots in a pick six, they would certainly not concentrate on three long shots in a pick three. That's just my logic. But I admit, I don't do multi-race bets myself, and the reason is that my play is so much contingent upon the mix of horses in the race that a scratch just completely changes the whole complexity of the race for me. And so therefore, especially in this age that we live in, like in pick sixes, where there are trainers who scratch horses and, oh gosh, suddenly there's a consolation.
Yeah.
Like a license to steal.
And not only that, it could completely change the race if the speed horse doesn't have the other speed horse to deal with, and you don't know that, right? And now like the whole handicapping of that race is, you know, he doesn't have competition for his style. I mean, that
sure
totally changes the race when that happens. And obviously, if I'm not a forehand only player, so I'm watching the card when I do it. I'm not just throwing it out there and not watching. If I see that, well, then I'm not playing the sequence because now everything's changed. I like to beat the favorite there because he's, like Derek said, he's got one horse that likes the same style as him, and he's going to grind him down. So, well, now he's not being ground down. That's, you know, before I was beating him, now I'm not beating him. So, I mean, there, you know, I have to go with the flow of the real time thing that's happening there. And
so, you're adapting.
Well, I have to consider that the race that I handicap is not the same race anymore. Right?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Let me ask you this: you're talking about changing your style of play here. Do you change your style very often?
I've been thinking about it, but resisting it. I dipped my toe in the pool of different style. I never used to play against bridge jumpers. I dipped my toe in that pool. I figured out how to do it. So now that's going to be a style I use going forward. So I didn't change it. I'd like to think I add, but I will basically, from what I can see, not be a win better anymore. If I really love a horse to win, I'll single him in a pick three. And if I can build two chaos races around him, I'll go that route.
Sure. Personally, I've found that the whole point is to find a percentage of pool that you can eliminate, a significant percentage of the pool, and that makes a race profitable. But, you know, most people, I think, err on the side of confusing price and value because, of course, they are not necessarily the same thing. And one thing, for example, I've talked about this in the past. In California, where they have the short fields, but, of course, there's short fields everywhere at times, but you have a five- or a six-horse field, the races, and they fall into one of two categories. Either they have two horses at 5-2 and below, or they have three horses at 5-2 and below. Mm-hmm. And the races where there are three horses at 5-2 and below 3-1, in other words, those races really have a tremendous exacta potential, because if the exacta comes with two low-priced horses in a race where there are three such horses, the payoff is 40% more. So, in other words, it might be like $10 versus $14. But in other words, you're getting this premium. The catch is you have to have a valid 5-2 and below horse that really you can bet against. And that, of course, demands the magic word that I keep hearing you say, is that you have data. You study this data.
Yeah.
How much time do you put into studying?
Studying the data, I'd say I don't know, but I'm going to guess. It's very, it fluctuates. One week it could be a lot, one week it could be none. But I'm going to say 35 to 40% of what I do is that.
Okay. See, and my approach to the game is ultimately systematic. But even my own approach, I'm in constant research. I mean, for years, I've spent an hour a night or more 7 days a week. Okay, reality is once in a while, I do, of course, take a night off. But when I do, I've made it up somewhere else. So I would say I'm averaging 10 hours a week of trying new things. And sometimes they take you down a path that doesn't work out. I mean, in fact, early this
Both
year,
times they do that, actually.
well, I don't find that because my
I mean,
methodology is so stable. If something isn't working after 100, 150 races, well, I go back. But I did find that I had gone so far afield. Oh, maybe it was March, April of this year. I had gone so far afield that I wasn't winning anymore. And I'll tell you what I did. I have a coaching client, Ira, who sometimes I wonder who coaches who. But I actually went to him and I said, okay, I want to take your method apart because his method is my method. And except it was my method from 6 months before. He got me back on track because I started doing what he does. Except, of course, our handicapping styles are different. I am always trying to cut it down and make it simpler. And Ira has a tendency to let it expand. When we add something new, his handicapping methodology gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, and I do both of those for myself.
Okay, tell me about that.
Well, I try to make it very complicated. I break it down. I make it more complicated. I deviate it up a little bit to make it even. I break it up. I make it into parts. I start doing more, and then I say, okay, well, this is not. That didn't really help. It didn't get me. In other words, I'm still where I was. But then maybe something I saw while I did that. I take that little piece. I go back to simple, and I add the little piece in, and I start expanding it back up from that. One of the things that I do that probably a lot of players don't do that use data. Maybe they do. I don't hear of it, so I don't know that they do. Is because I'm watching the actual races and paying attention and entering the data every night and looking it over and seeing where the patterns come. What I do is I notice a pattern and something doesn't jive with what I always think works. And then I go back and I reinvest my time in new data. That's what I do.
Okay. Well, and of course, for me, the bottleneck is not data because I've got, I don't know, we throw data away after 9 years. I think I'm at around 480,000 races, but I do handicap them one at a time. So I know what you're talking about. It's really like starting all over again. So I may go back and handicap a month, like the month of August and get some new ideas. But pretty much, I don't know if you can identify with this, but you do find the core of my handicapping has not changed in years. Would you agree with that?
For myself,
Yes.
absolutely. My core is always going to be beat bad favorites and not just to beat them because I know they are bad favorites.
Okay. Well, and I do admit that my profitability on favorites is far less than it is on the longer price horses.
Right. And time is finite. So I have to pick which horse I want to ride in the race. And I'm riding the beat the favorite horse.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you so much for being on today. Let me tell you a little bit. We're going to wrap this up now. And I do know you have a blog. We always make sure we put the link to your blog on the bottom of the blog post with the audio here. Thank you so much for joining us, folks. Please do share this podcast. If you like it, tell your friends. Put it on Facebook. Put it on Twitter. Let everybody know. Mark, thank you so much, and we'll have you on again.